this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
120 grand valuation and you're buying it for 40k. I've got to admit, I think that's the best first deal anyone's ever done.
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Matt Ward and David Dyack, welcome guys to the Ethical Property Partners podcast. Thank you so much for coming on today as one of our not newest partners, but partners that have been with us a little while and are rocking and rolling down in the southeast. Welcome, gents.
Cheers, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. So, guys, I think it'd be worth explaining to the listeners your expertise in property and what you had done prior to joining EPP. What was your background, guys?
Yeah, cool. So I'll go first, Frank. It's David. So, yeah, I guess prior to property, I'd started my own business when I was 23, like an office products business. The reason why it was office products was that I was selling the ink and toner from a family computer shop, and I just saw loads of people buying it, and I thought, do you know what? There's a business to be had here. So kind of left doing very, very minimal due diligence, market research, but started a business nevertheless. And after 5 or so years, I was like, I'm kind of wasted sitting behind a desk managing people. And, you know, we've done all right, but I realised that there was more to life than sitting behind a desk. So I started to get involved in property, done some basic training, should we call it. Spent a lot of time trying to find a strategy, and then Matt and I bumped into one another, and we explored a strategy called serviced accommodation. And effectively, it's where we were rent-to-renting or leasing properties from landlords and re-letting them back out with their permission as a serviced apartment. And we did that in 2016, and we're still doing it today. We've got a pretty decent team, and we've got 65 units that we run in our local area.
Awesome. How old are you now, David? If you're 23 and you run a business for 5 years, how long have you, how old are you now?
I'm 33 now.
33, cool. And how long have you been doing service accommodation?
For 4 years, since 2016. It was our birthday the other day, wasn't it, Matt?
Yeah.
Your joint birthday, cool. What's your background, Matt?
So I started off as, just out in the building industry, really, being out on the site, working and sort of managing jobs, and I loved it. But yeah, I always had that like entrepreneurial need and desire from being a kid, really. And yeah, I pretty much just was looking into property for ages and ages, and ended up getting started by having a refurbishment business, which seemed the best thing to do at the time in my experience. So did that for quite a while, worked especially with property investors and HMO landlords in specific, or landlords who wanted to turn their properties into HMOs. So we did that, and conveniently off the back of that, set up a HMO business as well, ran that for a couple of years, and then I discovered serviced accommodation and saw what that was all about, and met David, and kind of the rest is history, really. So 4 years on, here we are with a good portfolio.
You're so modest, I love it. But I think David said we're doing all right, and you just said a good portfolio. Let's let's share with the guys the size of your SA portfolio after just 4 years, which is, I think, amazing.
We've got 65 units at present, and the way that we've built the business, Frank, was that we knew pretty early on that we weren't going to be able to run it all ourselves. We've always had the idea of leveraging mind systems in mind and having a good team around us. And as we've gradually grown the number of units, we've built a team. We've got members of the team in the Philippines. We've got a general manager with 25 years of hospitality experience running large hotels for the Holiday Inn, running our business for us now. We've got quite a vast cleaning team of around 10 staff in total, a maintenance team. So it's kind of more hands-off for us now, which has given us the time that we need to focus on building our investment portfolio.
Awesome. I have to say, gents, I think a lot of people would look at where you are at, which is pretty awesome, 65 units under management, a proper business. You know, it's not a doing 3 or 4 rent-to-rent in your bedroom, and a proper team in place with proper leverage. I think a lot of people would have looked at that and thought, well, they've made it. You know, you make good cash flow. I'm not going to ask you to share your income and your cash flow from that business, but anyone who knows the figures on a successful rent-to-rent business will know that, or rent-to-SA business rather, will know that's a very lucrative business you've got there. But what you guys did, which I think is very, very sensible, is you were looking at how you could build your asset base. Because at the end of the day, all you had was rent-to-rent agreements. Those are your assets. What are your typical length of agreement, guys?
The average is really between 3 and 5 years. We found our sweet spot really for us. I mean, we do put break clauses in, but we found that getting started, we were doing a lot more 5-year deals and without as much experience. And as we've got more and more experience over time, we've just said, well, if we focus on mainly 3-year deals, our goal, as any business would be, is to perform, make sure we do what we said we're going to do, and then often the owners would extend, so then we can continue anyway. But it gives us both a bit of flexibility. That means we'll be able to get what we want out of it. Mm-hmm.
And so, great cash flow, but actually very little stability in terms of your business in 3 to 5 years' time. It could rapidly evaporate at the end of that if legislation changes or your landlords realize they could do this themselves or any number of unforeseen events occur. So I think very wisely you came to me and EPP and approached us and said, look, we want to actually start owning our assets so that we've got longevity of our business in mind while still doing the SA and perhaps doing SA on our own portfolio, but starting to buy these properties and build our net worth. So how long ago was that, guys? How long ago did you and I can remember exactly where we were when we first spoke. We were in a mastermind meeting of all places, I seem to remember. How long ago was that?
That was actually in July last year. And what happened was we was talking about quite a large deal at the time. And July being our peak season, we were just focusing on the SA business. We were about to hire our GM at that point, and we were kind of swamped. And it wasn't until actually November when we formally sat down with you and explored the options. And we left your office in Derby, and we were like, oh my God, what the hell have we been doing for the last few months?
You didn't tell me that at the time. I would have negotiated harder. My
fees would have gone out. You would have done, Frank. Bit of a light bulb moment, wasn't it? Yeah. After that day, it was, when we realised what was possible, you know?
And was that the first time we'd met in that mastermind, or had you seen me on stage or something like that before then?
I'd actually seen you on stage, I think at Expert Empires. Must have been back in June or March, maybe that year. I was really intrigued by your presentation, and I didn't see you again until when we saw you in the mastermind. So it was quite interesting.
Okay. I had a feeling you'd see me on stage. I can't remember if you'd said something at the time or something. I'm always interested in where people have come across EPP. It's good feedback. So we had a conversation in July 2019. We actually, you guys followed up on that in November, and was it then that you came on board in your 4-month trial? Is that when it started, November?
That's correct, yeah. So we started that in November.
So 11 months ago. And what action did you take in November last year? What did you actually do?
So we were holding our hands up, you know. We started and we had the plan in mind, and we done a lot of talking at the beginning because we kind of was going for a transition in our SA business with team, staff being off. Our energy was channeling straight into that, and we didn't really start taking proper action until around April of this year, believe it or not.
I didn't even say May.
Maybe even May, yeah. During the pandemic. And that's something that we're sort of annoyed about with ourselves, because we're very much all-in type people, and we were kind of not giving as much as what we should have been doing. Although we were learning coming to the trainings, our implementation wasn't where we wanted it to be. So we actually properly got marketing, should we call it, around May time. But since then, the results have blown us away. Kind of annoyed that we didn't start earlier.
Yeah, we're frustrated, I think, if we're being honest.
Well, we want to put a fine point on it, which I will, guys, just for your dissatisfaction, just for your uncomfortableness, and just for the guys listening to realise that every single month counts. Let's just look at this, right? It took you from July to November to sit down with us. So July, August, September, October, November, that's 5 months. But then you had December, January, February, March and April. That's 10 months of, without putting too fine a point on it, which you know I'm going to, it was 10 months. And then you started May, June, July, August, September. So you've actually been active for 5 months. And what have you achieved in 5 months?
It's been pretty mind-blowing, to be honest.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll share. Like, the first thing that happened that kind of blew us away was the amount of lead flow we had coming through. Because that's
and
been...
I think we should- should probably preface this, sorry gents, by saying where you are in the country. You're in the southeast, where a lot of people say, you know, below market value doesn't work, blah blah blah. How far are you actually from London?
Well, we're around 45 minutes from London, so not too far at all, but definitely strongly in the southeast, should we say.
Yeah, we're not talking Hull, are we? So 45-minute drive from London, so definitely in the southeast. And you took action in May with your marketing. What kind of marketing? Sorry, you were telling a story. Let me stop my interruption. You carry on with your story.
That's all right, it's fine. I mean, we're very much about the systems, as we told you, like from building our SA business, we're very much like, let's create a system from day one. Mm. And the minute we started marketing, we were like, blimey, this is kind of blowing us away, the amount of leads that are popping through. So, yeah, we created basically a CRM for ourselves, and the CRM started to fill up pretty quick, and we're again blowing us away. But once they come through and we had a system around it, I then started to follow up, speak to the vendors, understand the process, and then very, very quickly started to get some strong leads. And then we got our first deal after what? When did we sign that up?
Early July, I think.
Early July.
2 months in.
So learning the process, learning the calls, learning how it all works. And I went and put an offer in on a property that was going to offer 90K on it. But the owner told us that he only needed 40K. He had no mortgage. So, of course, I said yes. And we walked away with a deal 66% below market value, which is blowing our socks off and giving us the confidence we needed to continue growing like we are.
So I'm trying to reverse engineer 40 grand over 66%. Is that 120 grand property?
That's it. Yeah. That's
yeah. 120 grand valuation, and you're buying it for 40K. I've got to admit, I think the best first deal anyone's ever done. I'm not sure, but it could be the best deal anyone's ever done ever. But what a one to start with. Absolutely. Let's backtrack slightly, if I may. You have signed that one up. How many other signups have you got?
We've got one more official sign up, which we did last week.
Yeah.
Very cool. What was the numbers on it, Matt? I mean,
that was 310.
What, valuation 310?
Yeah, 310 valuation. And we're putting that one through 232. I think we're buying it for 232. Yeah.
200. So worth 310, buying it for 232. And that's approximately 75% of open market value. Awesome. And that's the thing, people go, oh, you know, it's all very well getting 25% off if it's an 80 grand property, which is true, but you're doing that on a 300 grand property, which is brilliant. I'm intrigued, gents. Two official signups. That makes me think there's an unofficial one somewhere. What?
Well, there is, yeah. We've got an agreement in place for a 300k property. Again at 225,000, which I'm signing up on Friday morning. So again, like another crack in mind.
That's a verbal yes. My house is worth 300. I'm happy to accept 225.
If I don't mind me sharing the circumstances, is that the vendor's so busy working 12 hours a day, commuting an hour a day there and back, working more than she's at home, hasn't got time to do viewings, hasn't got time to go and put on the market with an agent, needs a really quick sale. It just so happens that our marketing was in the right place at the right time. We followed up and followed the process, and here we are now. So exciting.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So you've got two signed up going through legals and one where you've got a verbal agreement that you're expecting to sign up this week. Awesome. Yep. Awesome.
Exactly.
And that's in 5 months of activity. I love it. I love it. So what marketing activity have you done in that 5 months? Let's get into the nitty gritty of that.
Yeah, so we've been doing a few different things, really. We've started off with letters, actually, so some direct-to-vendor letters, looking on the market. And then we're also throwing in some leaflets as well. So we've been sending them out locally. And then we've actually had some marketing in the newspaper as well, which hasn't actually gone too well, but it seems that we've managed to negotiate a new deal on that one.
Well, I've literally just got off the phone to the company. So the long story short was that when all the staff were working from home during COVID, I was dealing with one of the members of the staff, and she effectively took us on. We explained to her like it's potentially a 5-year deal if we get some results from it. But because she was working from home, she wasn't following their process and is now no longer with the company. We got zero off of it. So we were pretty frustrated. But I called them earlier on and they're sort of begging us to come back and they're actually going to give us a month free. But they're now going to work with us on targeted digital marketing as well. I've got to run through the numbers, but we expect quite a good response out of it. The confidence levels I've got in this at the minute is quite high. So we can only feedback on that one later on. But it's exciting to be running them two concurrently together to only help with our deals.
Yeah.
Mm. So you've done some newspaper advertising that didn't work, so you're restarting that. They've given you a refund or they've given you a credit note or something, have they? Is that
what it's done? A credit. Yeah, it's a credit because we basically followed up and said, like, you know, how many, you know, we haven't seen any data. Has it even gone live yet? And the person had left the company. So, you know, they're very apologetic, but they're very much about proving themselves now because that campaign is a 5-year commitment from our side. And they're invested. So as long as the results follow through and they match what our current market is doing, then we'll have another strategy as well.
To be clear, you're not paying 5 years up front or signing a 5-year contract or anything, are you? I'm just checking.
Our plan.
You're just angling the carrot. We're in this for 5 years. If you do well, we'll stick with you. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, just checking.
Definitely not.
Cool. So how many direct-to-vendor letters and how have you found those?
We've sent about 1,000 since sort of like May time, really. Yeah. And we've had an incredible response off that, to be honest. I think we've been getting about a 9.
I know you're in the southeast. All I can hear is sirens in the background. Like I was going to make a joke the first time, and then like, I must have heard 3 or 4 now.
Yeah, we're definitely deep in the southeast, that's for sure. Yeah.
If we get a siren, everyone comes outside their house where I am. Ooh, who's that? Who are they?
Are you joking?
Yeah. Like the kids will turn the TV off and lean out the window. Yeah.
Oh, we can't avoid that outside the office, can we? No.
Yeah.
About 1,000 letters that we've sent, and we've had about 9% response rate, which has been pretty phenomenal, to be honest with you.
So is that 9%.
Yeah.
But that would be 90 calls, wouldn't it, off 1,000?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So 90 calls from prospective vendors.
It's actually 90 leads. So we've had more calls than that, but some of them have not been like what we consider a lead.
So that's where you've spoken to someone and they've said yes or no, basically. You've had 90 of those.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And then how many help visits where you've actually booked a meeting with a vendor?
I think we've got 6 off of that, off the letters.
6 off 90. Just looking at your conversion rate. So your response rate from letters is really high. Your conversion rate off calls is low. I'm just giving you some free coaching here. I'm just working it out. That's a 6.7% conversion rate. That's low, guys, just so you know.
Context to that as well, Frank. Why? Because what we're finding is that although they're working very well and getting a good response from it, their expectations, having been managed by the agents and, you know, maybe had a couple of viewings and a couple of cheeky offers, they're not as receptive to our BMV as we would like or anticipate. So we're running the campaign with it for a while. We're going to carry on running it here, but we're tracking our conversions from help visits to leaflets and letters and whatever seems to be the most viable we're going to continue with. Leaflets, we are getting a better response from.
Mm. We'll come on to the numbers on that in a minute. Here's the thing. It's all about acquisition cost. Even if one's more expensive than another, often it's worth keeping both in your marketing plan because leaflets could suddenly dry up because your leaflet delivery company stops or whatever. So it's good to have a pipeline of both. But we'll come on to that in a minute. It's worth considering. Sure. It is low, though, and it just because it's low, there might be very good reasons for it, and I think you've cited a few good ones. They've been positioned by the agent. By definition, they're stale properties on the market, so they're going to be different to off-market properties. However, if you can get 6.7% up to 12%, that is going to make a phenomenal difference to your bottom line in terms of net worth, number of properties you're buying, etc. So it's worth looking at that for sure, and I'll come on to some tips for that in a minute. Brilliant. How many signups have come from those 6 help visits?
So from those 6 help visits on the
we've had on the one letters. That was one that was a sign, and then another one
that we were going to
purchase. So we had one sign up from that, and then we've had another one that's gone through. This is an interesting one that we went around. We helped the vendor, which we haven't actually told you about on today's call, actually. We helped the vendor. But it was something that we couldn't make work for them or for us. The property's value was too high, and the rental value wasn't enough skin in the game for us, right? So we had to explain to the vendor. But what I did actually do was help the vendor out, put them in touch with an agent who we work with, who's almost got a deal over the line for them. So we've actually managed to help the vendor out on that basis as well.
But you didn't make anything from it, but you helped the vendor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and to be honest with you, Frank, like, we were very emotionally attached with the vendor by this point, because we was working quite closely with them. So we've been able to get them a win out of it, so they can move on into their home.
And your agent will be grateful, and he'll thank you by referring you to people in the future, hopefully, etc. Yeah, so all good. Exactly. You've had one sign up deal for you from those 90 calls. Brilliant. What about leaflets? How many have you delivered?
50,000. Up to the beginning of September, and we've had two sign-ups from the leaflets.
Two sign-ups from leaflets, yeah.
How many help? Yeah, the one that's hopefully happening on Friday. How many calls?
We had 34
calls. Yeah. How many help is it?
Two.
Two divided by 34. So you're at 5.8% there. So interestingly, that's lower percentage.
It's interesting, Frank, actually, because we've been speaking about this quite a bit. To maybe we need to be a bit more flexible on who we go and see.
Definitely.
But we've been very strict on it up until today's date. But in saying that, the ones who we do go and see have been sign-ups. So.
Yeah, I can see that. My suggestion is a fewfold, actually. Firstly, with the vendor's permission, so at the start of the call, say, look, just, you know, for training and monitoring purposes, all our calls are recorded, and then hit record and send a couple of your representative calls. So not particularly good ones, not particularly bad ones, not particularly long or short ones, just a few average ones, like maybe record your next 10 and then pick two or three out that you think, yeah, those are average calls for us, and send them into support, and we'll critique those and get them back to you. And I'll be amazed if there's not like 10 or 15 tips that we can give you that will really, you know, each of those tips might raise your conversion rate by 1%. Well, then we're talking six deals instead of three. You know, it really is that dramatic. When you get to the bottom of your funnel, little 1% differences in conversion are massive. And well, we're talking about 75 grand equity in each of these deals, aren't we? So, you know, each little improvement's massive. What is it? Well, letters is quite simple because of the the cost. You're actually outsourcing your letter writing. You're not writing them. You're paying someone else, aren't you? What's it cost you to write 1,000 letters and post them?
So overall, our cost has been on the letters £3,900.
Right, okay, so...
£3.90.
And that's got you one deal. So that's almost bang on the 3,800 mark, yeah. And of course, when you first start off, it's quite a lot more expensive to fill your funnel because what would happen is you'd stop writing letters. If you stop writing letters today, I know you're not going to, you may well get another deal. You'd get a few more calls, you might get another help visit or two, and then you get another deal, and all of a sudden that 3.9 would get lower. So always filling your funnel at the start of your marketing is expensive. What about leaflets? How much does 50,000 cost you? I bet that's quite expensive.
Six are all in £6,300. I think some of them are due to be delivered in September still, so that's kind of paid for September as well. So
that's 3,150 per sign up. Bearing in mind, we're talking about sign ups at the moment, and what you'll find is for every 5, maybe 8, maybe 10 sign ups, you'll have one drop out. So one will fail to go through, and then all of a sudden it affects your figures quite dramatically. So you're bang on though. Your acquisition costs of sign ups are about spot on. Brilliant. Guys, that is impressive, really impressive. The other alteration I'd make, in addition to getting more training on your calls, is I would recommend that you do start going to more vendors. Try and double the number that you're going to. And it doesn't mean you're going to no's. If you say, look, this is how I can help you, I can, because the general message on a call is I can either give you 75% or I can give you 100% over time. And whether that's an exchange or delay completion, a lease option, vendor finance, however it is, once you've made those two offers to someone, doesn't have to be in one call, by the way. You can make the BMV offer first, give them a few days to think about it, then go back to them 7 days later, or having written them a letter, however you want to play it. There's a few different ways of using the system. But in a nutshell, after you've made the BMV offer and the full market value offer over time, unless you've got a definite no. So they might say, come on, mate, my property's £1 million. You're not having it for 750, which I've had people say that to me. Right. Once you then say, well, would £1 million over 10, 15 years perhaps work for you? If they've gone, no, I've got to buy £1.5 million house. And, you know, because my mum's coming to live with me, I need the money now to go buy it. You know, if it's a definite no on both accounts, then don't go and see that. That's just a waste of your time. But if it's a, well, I don't know, I don't see how that would work, but I'd always thought we were going to buy the next one with my mum, but I guess we could go and rent somewhere. And how much would I get each month? And once they start asking questions like that, rather than, it sounds like you're, you know, to get two signups from two help visits is remarkable from your leaflets. It sounds like perhaps you're trying to get to the solution, almost the heads of terms point in the call. And that's remarkably hard to do. How long are your calls typically, David?
Typically, I would say a good call is anything from 15 to 20 minutes.
Mm. Whereas I would say, do you know what the system is for a good call? Do you know what a quality call should be?
Go for it.
12 to 15 minutes.
Okay, cool.
And so that's significantly longer, like as a percentage, 15 to 20 minutes. So that does fit in with my hypothesis that you perhaps are over qualifying and trying to get to it. Now, what it does do is it protects your time really well. So if you're sat there going, look, we can only do, you've been doing this 5 months and you've gone and done, you didn't know you're getting a whole coaching session on this podcast, did you, gents? Just realized how much coaching I'm doing. I'll shut up in a minute and let you do some talking. You can talk about SA in a minute. Okay, we'll talk about your SA business. All the guys are interested in that. So my point though is if you've done 8 health visits in 5 months, so what's that, 2 a month, right? Just under 1 a fortnight. If that's all you've got time for, now they're 2 hours each typically by the time you've got there and done it and prep for it a bit, if that's all you've got time for, then you're qualifying appropriately. But I would argue that you make time for 2 a week rather than 1 a fortnight, and now all of a sudden you can do 4 times as many, and you can go out to the slightly more speculative ones, not the definite no's, but the slightly more speculative ones. Because here's the thing, when you're in someone's front room, if you've got a maybe from someone, then my answer is always, well, it sounds like there's a possibility, or it sounds like we're in the same ballpark. How about I pop out to see, you know, what day are we on? We're on a Monday afternoon at the moment. How about I pop out to see you on Friday morning, and I'll value your property accurately. We can sit and have a cup of tea and we can see if we can find a win-win solution. And it's just that close that you'll realize that more people will say yes. And they're not saying, yes, you can buy my house, but they're saying, yes, I trust you enough to come and have a cup of tea and see if you can help me, if we can work out a solution together. And that's exactly what it is. You just sit down with them, you spend an hour or two, and you try and work out a win-win solution. Now, at the moment, you've got a very buoyant market down in the southeast, as we do in most of the country. Give it 3 or 4 months, and they'll be thinking, I'm not selling my house for 2 years now. you know, this, you know, the bottom has fallen out on this, mortgages. We've got people that have got agreed sales at the moment where I know that, you know, properties that we're trying to buy, that someone else has stepped in and paid above market value, or they've offered full market value now and we were doing it over time. And I just know that those mortgages are going to fall through. Mortgage market is changing, but I've got a caffeine cast coming out. I think it's in a couple of days. Well, it'll probably be out before this episode airs, actually. But my point is, the bottom's going to fall out of the market. That's my prediction. And what you'll realise is you'll have way more people really be grateful for that cup of tea and couple hours of your time, which will lead to more deals. Now, I'm not going to say they're all going to lead to more deals, but what I'm saying is you might do 50% more deals. Well, that's going to make a big difference, isn't it? So just a couple of thoughts, gents. What are your reflections?
Well, first of all, thanks for that. I have to agree. I mean, personally, I would prefer to be in front of someone anyway, because I think I can build a higher quality level of connection.
Rapport
and connection from that. The reason why we haven't done so many is because of our lead flow is so strong.
On the phone all the time, yeah.
it does feel like that a little bit at the minute. But now that you said that, we have got a lot of maybes, and I very rarely get a no. To be fair. So the leads that we've got, we can revisit.
We've been focusing a lot on the higher quality leads to push them over the line to try and follow the system as best as possible. But I guess there's a lot of these maybes that maybe make up what sort of 50% of it.
Yeah, we can easily up that. That's cool. I'm glad that we had this conversation.
Good. My suggestion is, if you're going out together or you're going out as individuals, put a morning a week in your diary, maybe a Tuesday, and put an afternoon a week in your diary, maybe a Thursday or something. So split them up and have those as your default. That's when I'm going to be meeting vendors. And you just give yourself 3 hours or something. And then you've got the space on the shelf. We talk about space on the shelf. You know, if you've got a coaching business, so I've coached coaches in the past. If you've got a coaching business, you put the empty files. Let's say you want 10 clients, but you've only got two clients at the moment. You put the extra 8 client files on the shelf and you create that void. It's like, yeah, I need to fill those boxes. I need to fill those files with clients. Who am I going to go and get? And it's the same with your default diary. So you look in your Outlook calendar at the start of the week and you've got this big block that says help visit slot, and it's Monday morning and it's in there for Tuesday afternoon, your help visit slot. And then you look later on and it's a Thursday morning and you think, ah, there's another help visit slot. Who am I meeting this week? Right, who do I need to phone? And it creates that void that you subconsciously want to fill, because who wants to be sat in their office twiddling their thumbs when they should be out there meeting a vendor? No one. But at the moment you're feeling busy. Psychologically, you're winning, but actually you only win when you buy houses, agreed?
Yeah, agreed.
And so now we're moving that KPI up the funnel. The KPI now is not I'm getting leads in, and it's not I'm signing up properties. The KPI that we're missing out on here is I'm going out to meet vendors. And once you start going out to meet vendors, you'll start signing up more, which means you'll complete on more, which means your net worth will go up. So yeah, guys, I want to highlight something. And for those of you listening, you might have noticed this. You guys are so above the line, to use that expression. You are taking such ownership, such responsibility. You are accountable for your actions. Not one part of your voice, your attitude, the language that you're choosing to use is blame or denying there's an issue or trying to dodge the ownership of this. It's I think the reason you've been so successful is because you are so self-aware and are so massively responsible for your results. So congratulations, gents. It bodes very well for the future. Very well.
Thanks, Frank. Cheers, Frank. And I appreciate the help. Like, you guys and the team at HQ have been so valuable and like responsive to everything that we're doing, everything that we need and the support that we need around it. The team are there to help. And that's helped us progress quicker.
Yeah. And I think from a self-development side of things as well, like we've always been into self-development, working on ourselves. And I think a lot of that has helped from EPP and being part of the partnership. You know, it's not just about property, you know, there's a lot more to it than just the strategies. It's a lot about working on yourself and your mindset. And I think you definitely need that to be able to succeed in this game, because there is such high stakes at certain times and, you know, big scenarios where you need to be headstrong.
It's easy to bot, isn't it? When you're talking about hundreds of thousands of pounds, it's easy to bot.
You get yourself that. I mean, I must admit, when I first started calling up vendors and I'm like, right, this is what my offer is going to be, and it's on a 600 grand house, and I'm knocking off 500 grand.
50, yeah.
You know, like, you have to take some cojones to get to that point of doing the offer. And the first few times I was like, oh my God, like, how can I do this? But then you become accustomed to it. You realize that you're focusing on your goals and you've got plans to hit, because all the work we do with EPP is so visual. And we were constantly reminding ourselves of what our goals are, that in the end, you stop focusing on that little voice in your head and start focusing on the outcome.
Powerful, isn't it? Powerful. So I don't want to skip over 10 months of inactivity. What led to that? I'm not trying to beat you up, and I'm delighted that you've taken action over the last 5 months, but what happened?
I'll explain then. So the pure and simple side of it was we're spinning too many plates. Off the back of our success in our service department business, we've been running a coaching business as well, where we run small events for people that want to start service department businesses throughout the country.
And how's that going right now? Running events.
Phenomenally well, yeah.
We keep standing in this room, but no one turns up. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm actually in a mastermind of trainers who all run events, and yeah, I say it in jest, but actually to see people's dynamic movement online has been remarkable. But sorry, I interrupted you just to mock your
honestly, it's done us a favour though, Frank, because we was at a point of travelling up and down the country constantly, travelling to and from events, spending time away from home, which has an impact on everything as well. And when COVID kind of hit in March, it gave us sort of a big bit of breathing space as well to say, actually, do you know what? Is this what we really want? And that's when we started really getting our heads down and focusing properly. And our priorities weren't in line. We weren't really focusing on what we wanted to be focusing on. And then as soon as we decided and made a move to focus on the investment side of the business more,
we've been getting results, haven't we? Yeah.
Massive results. Mm-hmm. It's been at the forefront of everything that we do now. And we're just focusing on that. And that's why there was inactivity, because we was focused on the SA business. We had no GM. Then we're focusing on coaching. Then we're starting to do a bit of investment, but it wasn't really a lot at all. And now here we are now. So it winds us up, because we're not them kind of people. Like, we're literally all the all-in type of people, but now we're in.
When we focus, we know that we will get results, because we're all in. Like, we're just, just put every ounce of blood, sweat and tears that we have into doing it. And, you know, it's no surprise when you get results and you work with people that like yourself, you follow a system, it just makes it nice and simple. All you got to do is put the effort in, then, you know.
Tell you what, guys, a 5-year commitment is also a very effective way of achieving laser focus, because you just can't sit on the sidelines, can you? It's a commitment like that forces you to focus. So, excellent. Absolutely. Thank you for your honesty. I just got a quick question on that. What kind of percentage of your focus or percentage of your time was on your coaching, on your SA, on anything else, compared to now? What's your focus now? So you mentioned like investment, but it was really little. How have those percentages changed, just as a bit of an indication?
Yeah, sure. So when we spoke in July last year, I'd say about 60% of our time was on our SA business and 40% of it on the coaching business. And then as we got to November, it switched over really, and it was actually, it went more like 70% towards the coaching business and 30% towards the SA business, because we'd hired a GM at that point. And then now I would comfortably say that we're about 75% working on the investment business.
Was the investment pretty much zero before?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. To be fair,
it was 25% investment now and 25% on SA, or is there still some coaching going on?
It's a very small bit, really, just to sort of retain.
So like 20% and 5%, something like that?
I'd say 70-20-10 would probably be a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
70-20-10, cool. That's Matt. That's the numbers guy, Dave. Dave does the easy talk. I know what I'm listening to when I hear the percentages, yeah. So I would really like to drill down into, I'm sure some of the guys listening are thinking this. How on earth do you run 65 SA units on 20% of your working week? And let's just qualify that. How many hours a week do you work, Dave?
On that business?
No. In total, if you knew, I was going to work out 20% for you. But yeah, just on that business, how many hours do you work on the SA business and how many hours does Matt work? I just want to get a number because I know it's remarkably low.
Yeah, actively, I suppose, like an hour
a day.
Mm. Yeah, like it's very much like stepping in, stepping out type stuff. It's hard to pinpoint it, but it's more of a case of just making sure everything's running smooth, like overseeing it, should we call it?
So is that an hour each per day?
Yeah, I'd say so. And then maybe towards the end of the month when we get reporting and stuff, I'll oversee it a bit more and stuff like that. Yeah, so I'd probably say an hour a day is about fair, really, over the whole month.
So let's do that weekly then. So that's for each of you. 5 hours a week over a 40-hour week is 12.5%. 12.5% or 5 hours. So here's what I want to know. In, 5 minutes or so, can you describe how on earth you're running 65 units? And I'll be honest with you, I run how many SA units? Ooh, mine's a bit different because one's a hotel, but let's put that to one side. So I've got 28 units in that, but I'll put those to one side. I've got 3 holiday lets and a city centre 3-bed apartment. Is that what I've got? Yeah, that's it for SA, apart from the hotel. And I kid you not, my team, I know, spend more than 5 hours on those 4.
Yeah.
No exaggeration. So explain to me, as much as anyone else, how are you getting that level of leverage?
As you do, Frank, as well, with the systems you've got, we've been very much advocates of it since day one. So everything that we've done from day one, we made a point of logging, journaling, creating a handbook, systems and guides around it, right, to keep it sort of summarised and brief. We knew that there was parts missing in the business, so we effectively built our own system on how to manage our guest workflow, so that we know at every point what stage the guest is at, whether they've paid, they haven't paid, if they submitted their ID, they checked in, if they've got their codes, etc. And what this meant was once we had this in place, it meant this could be managed by anyone. So we started to build a team, mostly in the Philippines, who are like phenomenal, by the way. They're hungry to work.
Incredible.
Very, very good at following a system and a process and giving us too strong feedback. And as we've been building the business and bringing in more apartments, we've built the team out in the Philippines to do a lot of all the admin and customer service side of things. And then as we've got to a point, I've actually said, look, I'm not the best manager in the world. I'm all right, but I'm not the best. And Matt said equally the same thing. He's great, but he's not the best. But so who else can you? And when we got to the point of looking at it, we said, well, if we're really serious about growing this business and really stepping back, then we need to get serious about recruitment. So we looked around and we found a general manager with enough experience where he's run, 120, 130 room hotels, and wanted to look at our long-term plans, which is 100 apartments by next year, and look at how he can implement the same for us as what he did for the hotel chain. So we onboarded him, trained him up. He's been with us for a year in October. And he treats the business like it's his own. He's bought into the vision. He understands us. He respects us, even though we're kind of like half his age almost. Yeah, he's so invested in us as people and the business that he treats it like his own. And we give him the ability to treat it like it's his own business. And that's where our time goes into working closely with him to make sure he's managing the business how we want to manage it, but also so it works how we want it to be. And we can comfortably still grow the business and not have to be involved in it.
It's fascinating to hear. And I was totting it up earlier. I write little post-it notes when I'm doing podcast interviews. And I think you've described, you must be at close to 15, 20 team members? How many team members have you got in total?
Yeah, I mean, we've got, six out of the Philippines now, full-time, part-time. The GM, that's 7. Me and you, that's 9.
Yeah.
And then we've got
housekeepers.
Yeah, we've got about 8 housekeepers. So what's that? 17, maintenance, 18. Yeah, about 18 of us. Nearly 20 of us now. God,
growing. Proper business, boys.
like any proper business, it requires management. And that's what we realised, quickly when
we had to keep recruiting housekeepers because they don't stick around forever. So, you know, that they might chop and change jobs quite a lot. And yes, ever since we brought in our GM, he's just managed to share the vision with everyone. So we're quite a flat hierarchy as such. We don't have this, you know, whole thing of, oh, we're the owners, we're the directors, we're your bosses, listen to us. It's very much like we're all on the same level. Let's work together as a team and grow the business together. And I think once we managed to get our GM to share that, it's just been phenomenal. Like, we've had our staff staying longer than ever, and they're growing now within the role, so they're kind of getting promoted internally, which is brilliant. Yeah, we're absolutely loving it.
Can you give us any indication of turnover? Like, I don't want you to disclose your private financials, but for people that don't know, what 65 properties look like in gross revenue a month or a year?
Yeah, well, we just almost tipped, it's a bit annoying really, almost tipped the £1 million mark last year. This year's obviously been a bit of a weird year, should we say. But we turned over 200k in August, so that's pretty decent. But yeah, just under £1 million on a normal year, which we'd expect to be over that next year easily.
Our goal was to double it this year, but we unfortunately had other things popped up.
Yeah, there's a little 6-month blip in the middle.
Yeah.
It might be getting better, but we'll see. We'll see.
Like, global pandemic popped in the way. Yeah.
To be fair though, guys, and the way you reacted to that, because, you know, a lot of people would have thrown the towel in, 65 units. You know, Boris stood on the steps of number 10 saying, stay at home. That doesn't bode well for an SA business, but boy, did you do well. Do you want to just share like some of your strategies for not losing money in that time?
Yeah, cool. So like anything, we had about a day together where we were like, holy hell, like what are we going to do here? And then we pulled out the marker pens and got on the whiteboard and said, well, who else other than the tourism market and our normal market needs accommodation? And we started putting our heads together. I mean, we created a few different strategies. And the key one really, which I'll mention, is that we looked at the doctors and nurses who are going to be surrounded by people with COVID-19 all day long, every day. And where are they going to stay? They're going to go home to their families. They're going to need to self-isolate. And what we managed to do was work with a small number of them initially. And then when we got talking to them, understanding what they needed, they explained that there's a company who will help fund the accommodation, and they were being referred to the Holiday Inn. So me being me, jumped on the phone to that company after Matt and I talking about it for quite a while. And we've been trying to get in with this company like for a long time. And they're the government's main body for accommodation across the whole of the United Kingdom. And, you know, we spoke to them up, shared the vision, explained to them that we've got large numbers of doctors and nurses that need accommodation. How can we get on their book so it's fully funded? And within the space of a few days, we was able to get on their books, become a preferred supplier, and able to get fully funded accommodation for every doctor and nurse that stayed with us at good rates as well. And that was all paid for by the government, and it paid us in return.
Well, it's free of charge for doctors and nurses, which was our main priority, really.
So we ended up putting out some adverts. And then before we knew it, we started to get a response. As the responses started to come through, again through a system, I jumped on the phone, spoke to the doctors and nurses, and got them booked into the apartments, and they stayed happily, and they could self-isolate, and then we got reimbursed and were able to thrive, should we call it, during that tough period.
It's not surviving, is it? It really is thriving and growing, which is phenomenal. And I bet your landlords were expecting the whole, yeah, we won't be able to pay this month, et cetera, et cetera. Am I right in saying you maintained all of your payments to all your landlords? Is that right?
Yeah, we did indeed.
Remarkable, and credit to you, because those guys are now going to give you more properties, and they're going to be more loyal, and they're going to be hopefully, if our plans go to plan, hopefully selling some of their properties to you as well. So congratulations, guys, you've done amazing. You came in at a high level, but what you've done is you've continued to improve that business whilst bolting on the investment business, the business that's actually going to give you the net worth increase, you're building families now as well as portfolios, so it's going to give your kids an inheritance, it's going to give you your underlying wealth as well as the cash flow that your SA business has got, guys. And I have to admit, it's not by chance, it's not by luck, it's because you are tenacious, it's because you continually strive to improve yourselves and are an absolute gem of a couple on the partnership. I made it sound like you're married then. Actually, you are married, not to each other. But guys, you work hard and you work smart and you deserve all of your success. So thank you for sharing it with us, and long may it continue. Cheers.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.